This is The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, a UF expert breaks down Florida's recent crackdown on Kratom and 70H. And later, an audio postcard will take listeners on a journey to the bottom of Devil's Millhopper Geological State Park. But first, if you've been downtown in Gainesville recently, you might have noticed a lot of construction going on around Southwest First Avenue. The city is reimagining the area into a pedestrian-only space they're calling the Streetery. The project is expected to cost almost $5 million. I visited the construction site late last month, where I got to speak to project manager Brian Singleton. He showed me what work had been done already and what remains.
So right now we're standing on the corner of Southwest 2nd Street and Southwest 1st Avenue. The crews are actively working on laying brick pavers on 2nd Street and placing concrete base for brick pavers. And on the eastern end, there's a lot of underground work going on associated with stormwater drainage and underground electrical work.
What is the ultimate goal for this area? Once the construction's all finished, sometime in October, I think, what do you hope people will see once it's finally done?
So the goal of the project is a completely flexible pedestrian street or pedestrian plaza where during non-events, people can come and enjoy the space, sit down, take a break, enjoy one of the adjacent businesses, and then for events, having power receptacles, lighting, some furnishings for community gathering events, whether they're concerts, farmers markets, and things of that nature.
The city has to be mindful of its spending, obviously, but what makes this project, in your opinion, worth it to the city to invest so much time and money and effort into a project like this?
Downtown is one of our priorities to reinvest in. The original street was built in the early 1900s. With this being such a old street, there really was not any underground stormwater drainage, so there is now. All of the lighting systems have been upgraded or will be upgraded. There's also will be power receptacles added along the corridor for art markets or farmers markets so that vendors have a place to plug into opposed to running generators. So all that required a bunch of underground conduit and electrical work as well. The facility will be closed to vehicles except for 2nd Street and 1st Street, or they'll be continue to go north and south. But outside of that, it's essentially a pedestrian mall, pedestrian plaza.
Is the city expecting any secondary benefits from a space like this in terms of pedestrian safety or traffic safety?
So with closing a street to vehicles, it improves the atmosphere for pedestrians. So now pedestrians can take the entire street to enjoy and not have to think about cars. At 2nd Street and 1st Street, where the roadways will transverse the Streetery, we've added these flat tabletops. So that will encourage vehicles to slow down as they're driving through. We reincorporated that historic bricks into certain areas here. It's a much more vibrant and tactile surface to encourage cars to slow down. You'll see some different colored areas. Those are new bricks that will allow ADA crossings or wheelchairs or things of that nature. It's very hard to transverse over those historic bricks with those type of mobility devices, so that's why those other areas are there and those tabletops.
People have had a lot of questions and concerns, especially local businesses, around this construction and the project itself. What would you say to kind of assuage some of those concerns from both people who live in Gainesville and also the businesses who operate here?
We definitely appreciate the businesses being patient with us as we go through this construction effort. They are actually very excited about, you know, the final product. We want to remind everybody that the businesses are open. Please, you know, still come downtown and visit these businesses as we go through this construction project. And post-construction, they will have a lot more opportunities for patrons to come and visit and enjoy this outdoor space and their indoor spaces as well.
How would you go about reassuring people about the parking situation? Are you adding more parking spots, or is this mostly just a pedestrian area?
So for the street area itself, in the closure standpoint, the parking is spot neutral. We have more than 2,000 public parking spaces downtown. All that can be found on our website. Some of them are free. Some of them do have a fee associated with them. When it comes to private parking lots, read those signs as you're entering the parking lot. Not all of them are open to the public. Some of them have fees. So whenever you're parking downtown and you're pulling off the street or parking anywhere downtown, read the signs and make sure you're conscious of what the rules and regulations are with the signage.
That was Project Manager Brian Singleton talking with me at the construction site of the Streetery Project in downtown Gainesville. Southwest 2nd Street just reopened for vehicle traffic last week. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. What Levy County Lighthouse is the oldest still standing on Florida's west coast? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. Late last month, Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer announced he's updating rules around restrictions on 70H. WFSU's Tristan Wood spoke with an expert about the drug that comes from kratom.
70H is a naturally occurring compound in the kratom plant. It can be extracted from the plant to create potent products with similar effects to opioids. Uthmeyer listed 70H products as a controlled substance more than a year ago. Now, he says manufacturers have circumvented the ban.
At the outset, we did see significant exodus of products and businesses after we initiated the first rule. So it did do a good job. That said, I think people that make tens of millions or more on this, which is what these retailers appear to be making, they're going to dodge the rule. They're going to try to keep making that money. And we continue to see the adverse health consequences, more so even last year with the new rule in place.
Uthmeyer's announcement extends the limit to several other synthetic kratom compounds and places more stringent restrictions on 70H. No product can contain more than 1 milligram of 70H per gram. Also, products must contain at least 100 times more mitragynine, another compound in kratom, than they do 70H. Christopher McCurdy, a kratom and 70H researcher at the University of Florida, says leaf kratom products will be largely unaffected, because that concentration is consistent with what naturally occurs in the kratom plant.
You're going to still see mostly all of the powdered products, like, you know, leaf powders, encapsulated leaf. You'll also still see some of the extracts and concentrates.
McCurdy says he thinks the rule change is a good thing. He says while research is ongoing about kratom's usefulness for dealing with opioid addiction, 70H and other synthetically enhanced substances pose much higher risks. He compared it to the difference between light beer and Everclear.
To me, kratom falls into that same sort of risk category where the leaf material is probably the least risky, but it still has risks associated with it. And as you concentrate and increase the amount of that one consumes, you start to run into riskier business.
But McCurdy says the rule will be hard to enforce. He says he and other researchers have found products for sale in Florida that violated the previous restrictions.
From time to time, we will go out and spot purchase products from smoke shops or gas stations here in Gainesville, but I would extend it to around the county. I've personally seen them for sale other places in Florida just on my drives.
Since the product is only listed as a controlled substance in Florida, the protections only go so far. Residents could still purchase it in other states and bring it across state lines, or order it for delivery. But McCurdy says the new restriction will help to protect people who know little about 70H or are just buying it at the gas station.
What it does stop is people that don't know anything about it or walk into a smoke shop and say, hey, I've heard about kratom, I want to try it. And some of these vendors have been just saying, like, this is the newest, best-selling thing, and people are trying for the very first time, you know, a pure opioid and not kratom leaf or kratom extract that, you know, they were hoping to buy.
Ultimately, McCurdy says he wants to see more kratom research, but he thinks rules are needed to help keep customers safe.
My feeling is if regulations can be put in place properly, that they should be treated just like we see cannabis being sold in dispensaries, where you have someone that can provide some sort of education, some sort of assurance that the product is what it says it is, and that it's been third-party tested, and all of those types of things, and sell them to someone that is of age, you know.
Violations of the rule could lead to felony arrests in Florida. For WFSU News, I'm Tristan Wood.
This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, get out your hiking boots. We have an audio postcard from Devil's Millhopper Geological State Park. That's after a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. And now for an audio postcard. You can think of each story as an auditory exploration of North Central Florida. These are stories where the people closest to the story tell the story. Today, we're visiting Devil's Millhopper Geological State Park. Active adults, families, pet owners, and hikers can walk around the upper loop of this trail, which is mostly dirt path lined with trees. This rests above the natural wonder that attracts people to this spot, the 120-foot-deep sinkhole. WUFT's Krista Jensen visited the park in Gainesville to speak with some of the visitors about why they're enjoying this natural landscape.
At the beginning of the path, you start off on a paved area, and then the pavement goes to the left on a trail, and then if you go to the right, you kind of get some rocks and some of the dirt. There's leaves all over the ground. You get that just surreal nature feeling.
I'm here with my friend Britta Goldman. Oh, well, this is like one of my favorite spots in town, to be surrounded by the trees, and it's like, how do you say? Like, it's phenomenal. Like, unreal. Having the Devil's Hole, and you can climb down, get elevation. I really love it.
At the front entrance of the park, there is a little posting sign, and it says Devil Millhopper Geological State Park, opened in 1974. And there are stairs that you can take down. They're wooden, have a little bit of weather, but they're just outdoor steps that lead you down from the upper trail to the sinkhole.
I'm going up and down the steps because it's the best cardio you can get in Gainesville. Just that it's a treasure that we have this, and it's so close to where a lot of people live. Some people just walk here or bike here. I live 5-minute drive away, and I'm just very grateful that we have all these beautiful places to be outdoors and be active in this area.
Right now I'm making the descent to the sinkhole. There's quite a few steps. It gets greener as you get a little bit closer, but there's waterfalls, it's a sinkhole, so the ecosystem allows a little bit more. But the trail here, it's definitely very active.
My name is Rachel Echeverry. Hiking and spending time together is wonderful. It's great to get outdoors, and it's brisk today, but it's gorgeous and beautiful, and I love to see Florida. We're from California, so it's nice to explore a little bit and see what they have to offer here. We don't hike as much as we would like to hike. So my daughter actually did her first real hike yesterday. So she thought it was including with a wagon before. So that was hilarious. So not as much as we would like. But we came out here today because my cousin wanted to go in the sinkhole, mostly. But it's also just nice to see the different, I feel like, scenery here, because you actually see levels and, like, I don't know, it's not just flat Florida, no offense. but it was nice.
It's so peaceful out here, and the colors and just the atmosphere. You can get away. You can go around the loop as many times as you want, and you're really just in your own little place. It's a very easy trail, but it's very beautiful. And now I bid you farewell. It's my time to slowly make my way up these stairs. I say slowly because I'm looking around at the sinkhole one final look, listening to the waterfalls, but really, it's just because it's going to take me some time getting back up these stairs. Krista Jensen, WUFT News.
Krista Jensen with that audio postcard of Devil's Millhopper Geological State Park in Gainesville. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As a reminder, our trivia question this week, what Levy County Lighthouse is the oldest still standing on Florida's west coast? The answer's coming up at the end of the show. That's after a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. July 7th was National Tell the Truth Day, dedicated to honesty. But we all tell little white lies from time to time. We sent out WUFT's Bailey Perdue to hit the University of Florida campus and ask students the last time they told a white lie and why.
My name is Michelle Nolan. When was the last time you told a white lie?
A couple weeks ago, my grandmother sent me a giant clock to hang up in my house, and it was really tacky, and I told her that it had arrived broken, so I couldn't put it up. I defend this lie. It was thoughtful that she sent it to me, but also it basically was like this weird collage pattern of like 8 different colors, and none of it matches where it's supposed to go.
Oh, my name is Kayleen Castle. My roommate made banana bread, and I tried it, and I said it was really good, but it tasted so bad.
My name is Aditya Vishegu.
So when was the last time you told a white lie?
The last time I told a white lie was when I told a friend that I couldn't study with them because I honestly just wanted to study by myself. I don't know. I think it's a good positive. I think it's sometimes important to, like, you know, set priorities, especially, like, when you know you can't study with people effectively.
Yeah, my name is Molly Murphy.
When was the last time you told a white lie?
So one of my friends had me listen to the new Taylor Swift song, the one that's in the new Toy Story movie, and I told her I liked it, but my secret is that Taylor Swift is not my favorite.
My name's Katie Howard. That I'm almost there when I'm actually just getting in my car. I was meeting up with friends to go play beach volleyball at the Southwest Rec Center, and I was running late because I didn't want to get out of bed. They knew I was lying. Also, we all know we're lying when we say we're on our way.
My name is Jordan Tillez. My girlfriend's dad and I are really into shoes, and I used to have a bunch of shoes that he got me, and some of them I kept and some of them I didn't, but I never told him. So he referenced a shoe one time and was like, oh, you saw that shoe, right? And I was like, yeah, of course. But I sold the shoe actually, so.
How much did you sell it for?
So it was like, I'm really into like sneakers, so it was like worth like $500. So I was like, maybe it's okay to get the $500, so.
Yeah, that's kind of worth it. Do you stand behind this lie?
You know, yeah, because I mean, we have a great relationship and I feel if I actually told him, he wouldn't care at all, so.
Those were responses from University of Florida students answering the question about their most recent little white lies. It was produced by WUFT's Bailey Perdue. Before we end the show today, we have another edition of Bird Note. Today's episode is about the American crow and how it raises its young.
This is Bird Note. You're hearing American crows defending their nest, protecting their young. Although the American crow may seem rather blasé about pillaging another bird's nest, like that of this house finch, it regards a threat to its own young as a punishable offense. Crows are territorial, very protective of their food sources, ferocious and fearless as parents. Young crows fledge, or leave the nest, when they're around 5 or 6 weeks old and nearly the same size as adults. But they still can't feed or protect themselves. Fortunately, their parents look out for them for months. In fact, immature crows don't mate until they're at least 2 years old. They often stay with the family all that time, learning from the parents, and even helping with next year's brood. To protect their young, adult crows dive bomb people, cats, and other birds or animals. They strike with their feet, whip with their wings, and peck if they get a chance. The best thing you can do when there are baby crows around is keep your distance. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
That was Bird Note, a nonprofit independent media production that inspires listeners to care about the natural world and take steps to protect it. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. The team that made the show possible this week includes Dave Bereswain, Dana Hill, Tristan Wood, Krista Jensen, and Bailey Perdue. Do you have comments or questions about the show today or ideas for future shows? Email us at therundown@wuft.org. And if you want to go back and listen to this episode again or any of our previous episodes, you can find the show in podcast form on wuft.org/therundown or wherever you get your podcasts. Our trivia question this week was, what Levy County Lighthouse is the oldest still standing on Florida's west coast? The answer, Seahorse Key. The lighthouse was completed in 1854. It's only 30 feet tall, but it's located on a sandy peak that is 42 feet high. Seahorse Key, including the lighthouse, became part of the Cedar Keys National Wildlife Refuge in 1929. That's it for the Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina.